before the Dover Quartet arrived here for tonight's concert. They sat down via Zoom with Leah Uribe and Lee Wood to discuss their careers, their history with the Artisphere Festival, and their efforts to make classical music available to a wider audience, something that's been their passion for years. The Dover Quartet is Milana Parovendastat, viola, Joel Link, violin, Brian Lee, violin, and Camden Shaw, cello. Their conversation also touched on how musicians have spent the pandemic exploring music further, and how the world of performance is returning in a different world following the murder of George Floyd. The members of the Dover Quartet are proponents of playing music of composers' work that is underperformed on world stages, including composers of the past and the present. The music of one of those composers, native Arkansan William Grant Still, is included in tonight's program.
Well, I don't know about you guys. I think I might have heard of his music maybe the earliest. My dad is Colombian, actually, and I had the opportunity to compete in the Sphinx competition. And if you don't know about the Sphinx organization, it's incredible, giving opportunities to Latinx and Black musicians. And when I went to the competition, William Grant Still, Mother and Child for violin and piano, was one of the required pieces, and absolutely gorgeous. So since then, I think I was about 12 or 13 years old when I first started playing his music. It's so beautiful, so sweet, so heartfelt. And I'm surprised that not more people play his music more regularly. So yeah, absolutely. When we wanted to start doing what we could for equality and inclusion in music, that was one of the first names that came to my mind.
So Tuesday's performance is going to be one of the first performances back at the Walton Arts Center. And so we're getting a sense of normalcy, but as Leah said, we're kind of emerging back into a different world than it was 14 months ago. And being so world-renowned, but also being so young, do you guys feel a sense of leadership or responsibility to sort of bring classical music into this new world we're emerging into?
I mean, I think, speaking for myself only, I don't really think so much about us being young or renowned or sort of categorically in any sense, but I do think that we feel a responsibility to be part of, you know, a progressive positive change, regardless of those categories. And I think also it's been nice to see that in many different spheres where we're involved, at the Curtis Institute, for instance, in Philadelphia, there is a lot of discussion in every sphere about that. And that's really heartening to see that it's there are a lot of good people working on these issues in a lot of different arenas. And that's inspiring. And of course, there's always more that can be done and probably better ways that it can be done as well. And there's a responsibility to try to make that inclusion happen in the most positive way. And we've had discussions about that because that can be difficult. For instance, deciding how much to give voice to composers of the past who have not been played enough, like William Grant Still, and then balancing that with wanting to support new voices as well. And because there is, at the end of the day, a limited amount of time that any artist has. And so there are many more discussions to be had.
That is so beautiful, and thank you for bringing that. And I wonder also, what are you doing in the realm of approaching new audiences, which is part of this work as well? It's not only changing repertoire and the pieces, you know, per se, but where do you go to play? Who do you want to play for?
Well, I guess I'll jump on this one. This year, strangely, we've been able to reach more different audiences because of the sudden like immersion in the virtual world. And the audience, one of the reasons we made the documentary in the first place was to be able to do that. It was to be able to kind of break the barriers and the walls that make us feel like our field is such a separate and kind of niche thing from the rest of humanity somehow. This has been important to us for a long time, but we've had better opportunities now. In the past, when we've been touring and playing in different cities, different universities, we generally will end up, if there's an opportunity to go play for, a school full of underprivileged or kids or going to the shelter here in Philadelphia, we've we've done things like that. And it's just amazing to be able to introduce people to music they have never heard before, instruments they've never seen before, and connect on a human level where instantly someone hears the music. And of course it makes sense to them because we're all human and we're all listening to the emotions in a very similar way.
I'm so glad to hear you say that about the film, because I loved in the film the intimacy that you shared about your lives, and that it really did, I think, give people an insight into what your life is like as a working musician, instead of maybe this idea of classical music being on a pedestal or being untouchable. You gave such an intimate view of your lives. Was that one of the ideas you had going into making the film?
I might add that we're just as weird as everyone else.
Exactly. Just as weird as everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were one little detail before we made the film and before we got the idea to do it. We were quite young when we started touring. We were in our early 20s. And we would be asked at airports, where we spend a lot of our time, are you guys a band? Or, what do you guys do? And we said, yeah, well, so to speak, we're a string quartet. What kind of music? Classical. Really, you don't look like classical musicians. What does that mean? Just the fact that so many people have this preconceived notion of what do we look like? Should we have white powdered wigs? Wigs.
Have to be old and a little hopeless.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because in the film, I know, Milena, you talk a little bit about being the only woman in the group and about dealing with the perception and people's sort of reactions to that. And I'm wondering if that happens to the entire group, like you said, about what identities you bring to the quartet, and if there are things you have to go through in bringing that identity. People don't expect you, I guess, maybe to look like you would be in a band instead of in a string quartet.
Yeah. We keep discovering in so many ways, assumptions are just almost never constructive. Even when they're accurate sometimes. But assumptions, for instance, about, what a classical musician should look like, both in age or bringing it back to the George Floyd discussions about inclusion, imagining what race a classical musician should be, all those things, they're never that constructive. And I guess the truth is, a classical musician could be anyone. And that is something that we would like to show in the film as well. Of course, we're limited to the four of us, but there's a huge spectrum of identities and backgrounds that we do represent. And of course, that expands far beyond just a quartet.
I wanted to ask you guys, I know you're a very tight-knit group. You have a lot of history together. And I loved the film. I loved seeing that time go, how your relationships sort of change and morph and over time, and how you still are so close. But if you could play with anyone, either individually or take the group with you to play with anyone, who would you like to play with?
Do they have to be alive?
No.
Or is it just a dream sort of prospect?
This is fantasy. We'll play fantasy.
I know. I was thinking about Duke Ellington and Sarah Vaughan and those people. Going back to the really soulful, intimate jazz world.
That would be amazing.
It feels so weird to think about it. The cliche answer is I would probably still play with the people I do. I really do have a lot of respect for my colleagues. I know that's the not answer, but
it's a very,
this is hard. My mind has never really gone there, in a real way. So
I feel like I could say any number of composers who were, proficient at a string instrument, Dvorak, for instance, his viola quintet with him would be sort of cool. Stuff like that, I think, would be, pretty fun.
Camden, you have an idea?
I guess a couple. I would restrict it. I'll restrict it to living person, because I think there are just too many for me, too many people of the past I could not ever choose. But one living person who I find so artistically fascinating is this guy. The quartet's not going to be surprised I'm saying this. Dave Longstreth is his name, who writes all the music for the Dirty Projectors, which is an indie group. But essentially, I mean, he was a Yale composer, a classical, you know, classically trained composer. And essentially his music is really hard to define or to describe, but it's very adventurous and advanced. And I really love the way that he thinks. So I would be so curious to play with him at some point. And maybe we can even make that happen. We'll see.
I was going to say, you know, the power of commissioning and all of these interactions we can experience. You know, you have been coming to Fayetteville for 10 years, right? You have been interacting with this community. How do you envision all of these changes, opening spaces, making, you know, your music available in our community, Northwest Arkansas, that you already know and you have actually strong connections with? How do you envision that? And maybe even going a little bit further, what is your role in that change?
What we've been doing, when we go to Artist Fair every summer, it's just, that's been happening every single year. It's been, we feel more integrated into the community. We feel more close to everyone we encounter, and the community grows. My favorite night of every summer that we go to Fayetteville is the pop-up concerts when we go up and down Dixon Street and play in the cafes and the bars and restaurants. And you start to have people every year, the same people coming back, but then it grows and more people are coming. The audience is so much more diverse than if we were just to only play in the Walton Arts Center or at Crystal Bridges. And then it brings those people into the Walton Arts Center and to Crystal Bridges. And I remember meeting a family at one of the bars and then deciding that I would use a few of my complimentary tickets to bring them out to Crystal Bridges, where they'd never even seen the museum. So I think that they've been on a really good track, or we have been there. And if we can do more of that, going to the farmer's market, playing outside, the trail mix concerts, I think that just... And it goes with the whole theme of Artist Fair too, which is music and nature. So I think it's just really, there's a reason it's one of our favorite places to be. It's doing the right thing. Like, we're already starting to do that connection, spread of connection.
I think it's kind of, it's laced in everything that Milena's saying, but I feel like for me, I think our role is to not dumb down the music, but to, if you want to call it this, not dumbing down the concert hall, but like reinventing the concert hall experience for people, because I feel like there is all that stigma and like this feeling of like, oh, people are fancy and they know when to clap and like they know what to wear and all this stuff. And I think like people are often just really afraid of the experience because they feel like they're not going to be accepted or they can't enjoy it in the way that they would like to enjoy it. And that's what I think Artisphere has done so well is, you know, even what Milena's talking about, going up and down Dixon Street, like the music stays the same. It's not like we're shortening it or like not playing it well. Like the idea is like, sure, maybe it's not the most rehearsed performance because people are sitting together reading, but that's what we would do with our friends normally as classical musicians on a fun evening, if that's, you know, the kind of chosen poison of the evening, right? Like to like sit around and read, and that's really fun. It doesn't always sound great, but the idea is that I think the focus is on doing something at a super high level, but also in a way that brings people in.
Yeah, so. Actually, that what Joel was saying, like reinventing the experience, reminds me of just this perception I think people have of needing to know something about the music before they can enjoy it or before they can hear it, which for whatever reason, I really think this art form is the one that's the most prevalent, that expectation. But we put all these, or I say we, but we're in it. People who don't really haven't been immersed in classical music put expectations on themselves or what they are supposed to do or react, how they're supposed to react, how they're even supposed to feel when they listen to the music, what they're supposed to understand. This kind of thing that we don't really do if we were to I haven't studied art or art history. And I could go to a museum and just be like, I wonder what that's going to feel like to look at it. And I don't put all this pressure on myself to know something or to feel a certain emotion when I look at the art. And I think that if we could treat music that way too, as just our own personal discovery, our own personal journey, that'll take all that pressure and stress off the experience.
The Dover Quartet, Milena Perovan de Stott Viola, Joel Link Violin, Brian Lee Violin, and Camden Shaw Cello, talking with Leah Uribe and Lee Wood via Zoom last week. That's before the musicians arrived in Northwest Arkansas for tonight's concert at the Walton Arts Center as part of the annual Artisphere Festival. The concert will be broadcast live tonight on KUAF beginning at 7. It's hosted by Leah Uribe and Lee Wood. You can learn more about the Dover Quartet and the documentary discussed during that conversation at doverquartet.com. More about Walton Arts Center and the Artisphere Festival at waltonartscenter.org.